Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Across the UK, online, on DAB, and on your smart speaker. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. The wind is in our sails, ladies and gentlemen. The streets are getting busier. The trains are filling up. The pubs and restaurants are being booked by the millions. And there is a definite sense of normality in the air. Even masks are beginning to come off in more and more locations that I visit. Yesterday, I watched as dozens of people waited patiently to get their cars clean, observed shoe shops filling up with customers who were trying on shoes, and even spotted traffic jams all over town. The economy, ladies and gentlemen, is definitely on the rebound this morning. I'll be bringing you figures of just how much the economy has bounced back this week, and it's pretty impressive. Sales of pints alone, right, this was on Monday, were up 340% on Monday from the same day 2 years ago, that's in 2019. 340%, more than 3.5 times as many pints of beer were sold this Monday than 2 years ago. Look around though, and there's an interesting mood in the air. Something else that I've deducted over the course of the last few days. This morning, the Sun's got a video of women fighting on a plane over some overhead luggage space. And this morning, on the Tube, there's a definite air of what I would describe as edginess. Some wearing masks, some not. Everyone looking a little bit leery. Are we all just an inch away from snapping? There's quite a lot of interesting things going on. And so I want to know from you this morning, what are you seeing as ever? What are you hearing? What are you doing? And are you noticing that people are a little bit more edgy than they used to be before this lockdown? 0344 499 1000. First up today, though, I'll be asking John Rentoul, the Independent's chief political commentator, how he thinks it's all going and whether he's got a second job with a lobbying firm or possibly not. Plus, we'll be finding out just what the problem is at Heathrow, where arriving passengers have been waiting for as long as 7 hours to get through immigration channels. That's going to be a bit tense as well, I would have thought. Coming up, we've got author and commentator Helen Dale on the lockdown versus vaccine debate, and we'll be asking why care home rules are still so strict for visits and whether workers are going to have a vaccine. Lucy Beresford's going to join us as well to talk us through the state of us, the state of our mood, the state of our mental health, and whether or not there is a sense that out there it's all a little bit wild westy at the moment. And because it's Thursday, it's time for the Thursday Club with wine expert Helena Nicklin, who today is going to be helping us celebrate International Malbec Day. Yeah, I didn't know it was either. 0344 499 1000. You'll listen to me, Mike Graham, on the fastest growing radio station on the planet. It is, of course, Talk Radio.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. Fully inflated this morning with a sense of our own self-importance, but also fully happy, I think, that things are beginning to look as if they're getting back to normal. We're going to be asking all of our guests today what they're making of all of that, as well as, obviously, their areas of expertise. John Rentoul joins us first, Chief Political Commentator at The Independent. John, very good morning to you.
Good morning, Mike. No, it's great. It's great getting back to normal, isn't it?
It really does seem like it, doesn't it? I mean, I know that sometimes I can be accused of getting a bit carried away. But, I was out yesterday. I know, it's shocking, isn't it? Loads of people waiting to get their cars washed. You know, there was much more activity around the shopping centre that I go to locally. You know, many more people out and about just in ordinary shops, which haven't been open for, you know, the best part of 4 months. And there's just a sense of kind of optimism, it seems to me.
Yeah, no, that's right. Except that I was trapped at home yesterday because, you know, the wonderful thing about lockdown, of course, is that you're always in.
Yes.
So if you're expecting a delivery or a parcel or something, you know, it's never a problem because you know you're going to be there. Whereas yesterday I wanted to get down to the House of Commons as usual.
Yes.
And I couldn't because I was waiting for a delivery.
Well, couldn't you just go back to the way it used to be, where you miss every delivery that ever comes to your house because you're always out and you never ever actually get anything that anybody sends you?
Yeah, but that's no good, Mike. I actually need a new printer.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, listen, go and buy one in a shop and carry it home like everybody else can now do. No, this is the point about getting back to normal. Go back to the way we used to be. Stop getting everything brought to you by a man in a van and actually go to Currys or somewhere. Other stores are available and bring it home in a box.
Yeah, no, but there are advantages to the working from home routine that some of us got used to. But I mean, actually, I've been going down to Westminster most of the time recently. Because I need to talk to people, otherwise I've got nothing to write about.
Well,
because,
right.
It's all in my own head.
I mean, you're an observationalist, John, and I think one of the great things about being in places, and I've always said this as a journalist, and the tragedy for a lot of journalists now is they don't go anywhere. They sit at their terminals and fire out 15 pieces a day on Mail Online.
That's right.
And they don't actually meet anyone. They don't see anyone.
No, and And they get all their news from Twitter, and they just write that up as a news story.
Yeah.
And that's, you need, you're absolutely right. You need to talk to people. You need to bump into people. You need to talk to other journalists in particular.
Right.
I don't need to talk to those MPs. I mean, they've never got an idea in their head. But, I mean, other journalists are always fascinating.
Well, do you know what's funny? We did a show from a pub on Monday, as you would have expected us fully to do, the Horseshoe Inn, a beautiful pub just around the corner here from the Shard. And we'd booked a load of Tory MPs to come. But as soon as the edict went out from Boris Johnson that we must be very sensible and we mustn't overdo it, they all cancelled.
Yeah.
Now, the funny thing was they didn't cancel because Boris Johnson had told them to cancel, as far as we were concerned. They all came up with different excuses that they couldn't come. And I'm like, guys, you know, we know why you're not coming. Why don't you just hold your hands up and go, look, we've been told we shouldn't really do it, so we're not doing it. Fine, I would have accepted that. But, you know, that's the problem with politicians. You can't trust what they say.
No, they're all fine people, Mike, but they're obviously a bit too busy to come on your programme.
You only get invited to one of my pub shows once. If you don't come, you don't get invited to the next one.
Is that the pub I cycled past when you were sitting there drinking during the lockdown?
No, that was Brindisa. That was the Spanish tapas bar on the corner of Borough Market.
Oh, right, okay.
But easy to confuse the two. But listen, what are you making of the way things are down at Parliament? Because obviously there's a lot of people who would like to see it getting back to normal more quickly rather than more slowly. But it doesn't seem to be much appetite for it down there.
No, and you know, I do think Boris Johnson got stung last year because he was very keen to get people back to their offices. He's keen for Parliament to lead the way. The Speaker was much less keen, and then of course we had the second and third waves, the second and third lockdowns, I don't think the Prime Minister is going to be pushing quite so hard for Parliament to come back to the previous way of working.
No.
Because I think they want to leave people to drift back to their offices by negotiation and by consent. And I think that's going to be a slightly longer process. I think it's a shame because obviously I prefer Parliament when it's full and noisy and raucous. I think that's democracy at its best. But opinions differ on that. A lot of people think it's schoolyard politics, but I like it.
Yes.
So we're not gonna have that. So we'll still have the sort of slightly bloodless exchanges in a semi-empty chamber with people contributing by video, which is really not the same at
not
all.
Not ideal. My two favourite moments yesterday, sorry to interrupt you, were when Sir Keir Starmer revealed himself to clearly not be a fan of Line of Duty, but by like all previous incumbents, trying to make out that he's a man with his eye on the popular culture. Because I was talking to Charlotte Ivers as it was happening, and I said to her, you know what's going to happen? And she's like, yeah, they'll get him on the Today programme and ask him who his favourite female character is, and he won't know.
Yeah, no, well, I didn't understand the reference to Line of Duty either. It's something about AC-12 or something.
Yeah, Ted Hastings is the guy who's, in fact, funnily enough, just got retired as a result of the fact that he's too old and too white.
Yeah, no, I think simply using the phrase bent coppers in the chamber is not, you know, by itself hilariously funny.
No.
And a really crushing put down for the Prime Minister. But, you know, I mean, Keir Starmer was having a good time yesterday.
Until then, I think, actually. He was doing very well, I thought, until that moment. And then it just looked like something he'd been told to try and throw in a reference to it, you know?
No, I think, you know, he had... you know, normally he looks a little bit sad and serious and forlorn. He's got this furrowed brow look that he and Annalisa Dodds, all of them have. You know, they sound really worried.
If you were in the Labour Party about to lose a by-election, you'd be worried as well.
No, but their tone is always one of, you know, really sort of earnest seriousness. Whereas yesterday, you got a sense that Keir Starmer was actually, almost enjoying this green cell business too much. Yeah. Really. He was sort of, he was laughing and talking about his, you know, the excuses people came up with when he was a prosecuting counsel. Yeah. The shoplifter's defence, yeah. as he called it. I mean, you know, he was having a good time, and fair enough, because the government is in trouble on this.
Well, I was going to ask you about that, because I mean, I wonder whether Boris Johnson's actually quite enjoying it as well, because he's not much of a fan of David Cameron. He's got no problem throwing him under the bus. And I mean, the idea of the civil service is the story here, because actually, the other story about Cameron and Rishi Sunak is so, you know, impermeably complex that nobody can understand him. The Daily Mail today have done the most ridiculous graphic, which has got sort of arrows pointing right, left, centre. Here's a connection over here. There's a guy over there. Yeah. You know, you might as well not have bothered. I mean, you know, literally look at it and immediately fall asleep, slump over it, you know. Whereas the idea that these highly paid civil servants have actually got second jobs, I think is a total scandal.
Yeah. Yeah, but, you know, this is all happening under a Conservative government. And, you know, although Boris Johnson might enjoy tweaking David Cameron's tail, you know, for most people who aren't following the detail, they're all Tories and they're all at it. And
they're not very good at it, though, are they?
But it doesn't matter. It just doesn't look good. It doesn't sound good. And, you know, Boris's attempts to distance himself from David Cameron are not entirely successful, because I think most people, although they recognise that, you know, he is a bit different because he's the Brexit Prime Minister and he had an election of his own and all the rest of it. But, you know, he's still a Conservative, and he was defending himself yesterday by saying, well, we passed the Lobbying Act in 2014.
Yeah.
As Keir Starmer said, who passed that? That was David Cameron, and look what he got up to afterwards.
Well, apparently, though, it's not really the Tories' fault they keep winning elections because Labour are so useless, because Labour would have been in charge had they not been so useless, and they would have been allowing civil servants to do exactly what civil servants have been doing. So you can't really blame the Tories.
You can, actually, and Keir Starmer did blame the Tories. I mean, he said that the Lobbying Act in 2014 wasn't tough enough. And, you know, he's got a point.
Well,
I don't understand
is why is he not going after the people that Hancock was helping out with the old PPE stuff?
Well, that's a bit more complicated, because there are good reasons for why that was done in a rush. Mm. But, you know, if the rules actually allow a former prime minister to lobby his successors for profit, then those rules do need to be tightened up. And I think that is something that is going to reflect badly on the Conservatives. I mean, maybe some people will just say, well, you know, politicians, they're all dreadful.
Well, they will.
Let me tell you, John,
this story has no cut through to the populace of this country. Nobody cares, because they're already looking at it like that scene in Casablanca where Inspector Renault comes out and says, you know, we're closing this place down immediately. We've discovered gambling is going on. And the guy comes and goes, here's your winnings. And he goes, oh, thank you very much indeed. Everybody knows that this has been going on for years and nobody cares. I think that's the problem. Have we lost you?
I do care. People are annoyed about it. People do think the politicians
are... The Labour Party are annoyed about it.
Yeah, no, but I think that, you know, there is a party bias in this. I think people think that the Conservatives are worse than the Labour Party, slightly. I mean, you know, maybe there's not a huge thing in it.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things they need to do is stop putting Eric Pickles up as the man to defend it, because I don't think that's going to work terribly well. But listen, John, I think we're losing you, so we're going to cut you there. Sorry to do so. But John Renswell, Chief Political Commentator at The Independent there. I'm pretty sure you don't care very much about the lobbying scandal, so-called, in the Conservative Party, because that's what lobbyists do. As somebody said on Talk Radio yesterday, lobbyists got to lobby. That's their job. I'll tell you what you do care about, though. What we do care about is that basically there are too many people out there who are wanting to tell us how to behave, wanting to tell us what to do, wanting to tell us precisely what we should be doing. And that is the point.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. I spotted a video this morning from an airline flight where two women, actually more than two women, decided to get going fighting each other over some overhead baggage space. Julia Hartley-Brewer actually said, well, she would always defend overhead luggage space because it's one of the big bugbears that you get. But here's my point. I mean, looking at it, yes, you can say this kind of thing happens and has happened before, but it strikes me after I came on the tube this morning, noticing that there was a lot more people on the tube, a lot more people looking at each other slightly differently. We're in post-lockdown mode here, and I think a lot of people are quite frustrated, a lot of people are quite edgy, a lot of people have got quite short fuses. Let's talk to Lucy Beresford, relationship expert, about exactly how we are coming out of lockdown, because in the end, you have not seen many people. A lot of people have not seen many people for a very long time. Lucy, very good morning to you.
Hi, Mike. Yeah, it's a very strange situation because there's a lot that we haven't been able to control, obviously, the virus.
Yeah.
But by staying at home, we've been a lot more in control of our environment. And now that we're coming out of lockdown, you'll get scenes like this because we're having to interact with other human beings.
Yes. And I mean, at the best of times, there are those of us, and I don't count myself as particularly intolerant, but, you know, people do annoy me quite a bit. You know, it can be the case that people can annoy me. But what I noticed on the tube this morning was, one, they're a lot busier. Two, there are two sort of sets of people. There are people now sitting down next to each other, which they weren't doing 2 weeks ago. People, some wearing masks, some people not wearing masks. And you can see people looking at one another like, why are they doing that? And sort of wanting to say something, but maybe not saying something. But I can just see a situation where it's all a bit fraught, really.
Well, it's very fraught because there are different rules and people don't know what the boundaries are. So, again, in your own home, you can set the rules for how people conduct themselves. When you get outside, and of course, the clip that you've posted onto Twitter isn't just about abroad, but there are quite a lot of people on that flight who are not wearing masks.
Right.
Whereas my understanding was that actually you have to wear masks in an airport, on an airline. So other people who are obeying the rules, whatever they might be, will often look at others and think, well, why are you allowed to get away with this? How come you're allowed? How come you're so special? Are you special or are you stupid?
Right.
And that kind of internal dialogue is going on, monologue maybe, and then it really makes us feel very resentful of the people who seem to be getting away with something that we ourselves would love to be doing, but we're not because we're being so law-abiding.
Yeah, but I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? Because law-abiding is a very wide ranging phrase, for example. I mean, there are lots of people, for example, who will wear a mask on the tube, but will have people around to their house for dinner and just not tell anyone. So, I mean, I think the problem is it's been going on for such a long time that everybody's done things in a different way, and not everyone has been quite honest about it as much as some people are out in the open now. And I think as time goes on, I mean, even as next week comes, we will see a kind of a split in society, I think, because a lot of people want to tell other people what to do, and a lot of other people don't want anyone to tell them what to do, and never the twain shall meet.
Or there's that third group of people who are absolutely, you know, waiting for a fight. They kind of walk into a supermarket without a mask and look at everybody as if to say, I dare you to challenge
yes.
me so that I can have some kind of bust up. But I think psychologically we have to recognise that, you know, we're quite basic creatures at heart. We're sophisticated in many ways, but we also like to know where we stand. And if we've had a particular instruction, which we got a year ago, I must ask you to stay at home. That's very clear and understood. But as you say, the last 12 months have been much more fluid. We've made things up as we've gone along. Within families, they've made different decisions. So we're going to have to, this is what is going to make coming out of lockdown so stressful for a lot of people. It's that they no longer know what all the rules are. You know that when you cross the road in the UK, the cars will hopefully be coming in one particular direction or the other. You know that.
You have to look the other way to see the cyclists, though, because they're coming the other way.
And all those cars that kind of are electric and don't make a sound, and you haven't quite got used to that.
And but then there's the scooters.
By and large, you know what the rules are. They've had them drummed into you for decades. This is a completely different ballgame. And what we need is to actually have a lot more compassion for not just ourselves, but for our fellow people, because we're all struggling in this. We are all going to make little errors, little mistakes. Oh, sorry, I didn't know that was the rule. So instead of really going for the jugular at the off, instead of being really aggressive, and that's the problem, there's probably quite a lot of pent-up emotions. Thank goodness gyms are open so that kickboxing can take place.
Yes.
Normally my go-to suggestion for clients who have quite a lot of anger issues is like, kickboxing is brilliant.
Right.
But if you've got a situation where someone has overstepped the mark, just remember that we are all trying to get through this together. Don't kick off immediately. Just take your time, take a deep breath, and maybe be a bit kinder in your response to something. But you know, on that clip that you posted up, where are the where was the airline saying, I think the luggage that you're trying to get onto the plane is just a bit too big. You know, we have a hold for that. That's what normally happens. So at some point, you have to defer to the people who are making these rules. And at the moment, I don't think we know what they're doing.
Well, that's the other problem, because, I mean, there was a time, Lucy, when we didn't have that many rules. And so basically life was a lot simpler and people went about their business and did whatever they wanted within the law. But the law now has become so overbearing that a lot of people just don't know what the rule is, and two, are not really very interested in what it is.
Well, I think actually we have had lots of rules, but you described a scenario just now, which is where we've all been slightly making things up as you go along. Mm. And I think that happens a lot. You know, there are some very hard and fast rules laid down either by governments or by faith or whatever. And we tend to abide by those, again, because we've learnt them from childhood. But this is a whole different proposition. None of us have ever been through a pandemic like this before across the globe. Even different countries are going to set up different rules. So if those of us who are going to go travelling, hopefully, in a week, you know, in a couple of months' time, we're going to discover that there's a whole different landscape in other places.
Yeah.
So again, compassion is going to be completely key. It isn't about seeing if you can score points. It isn't about trying to shame people. It's simply about trying for all of us to work out where the roadmap is. Mm. Not the roadmap that the government is giving us, but the roadmap that's going to allow us to live on a daily basis with ease and with grace for other people.
Yes, I think you're absolutely right. Lucy, thank you very much indeed. Lucy Beresford, their relationship expert on the need for compassion. Well, here's what I want to ask you people out there today, the good people of the Independent Republic of Mike Graham, because that is, of course, where all the common sense resides. The commonsensical point of view, from my point of view, is you don't go around telling other people what they should be doing. You know, I did not have the urge this morning to go up to anybody on the tube to ask them why they were wearing a mask. God, I know people who have been asked that. Also, I didn't have the urge to go up to people who weren't wearing a mask to say, why are you not wearing a mask? Because it's none of my business. I don't really care. Right. I care about my own situation. I don't care about what other people are doing unless they're actually hurting somebody else.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.
Let's talk straight away to Julia Jones, co-founder of John's Campaign. Julia, very good afternoon to you.
Hello, Mike. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Not at all. Thank you very much for coming on. We will talk about John's Campaign in a second. First of all, what do you make of that video, the amazing video that we've all watched of the elderly couple, Gordon Davis and his wife, Mary, reunited for the first time in over a year? It brings a great sort of tear to the eye, but a joy to watch it as they reunite and see each other for the first time. But my question would be, what on earth is going on in this country when a couple like this, who are both 89 years of age, have not been together for this period of time?
Dear Mike, that's absolutely the right reaction. I think that people in positions of authority fail to realise that you can be old, you can be disabled, you can be living with dementia, you can still experience love.
Yes.
And
yes.
Actually, it's the one thing that's been missing from the equation over this last year. And that's a really big lack in our lives, because love makes people feel better.
Yes.
And if you're feeling better and you've got well-being, you've got a chance of confronting whatever comes your way. And that's what people just didn't seem to realise.
No. And human contact as well. I mean, how many people have we seen? And I've had many calls over the course of the last year, Julie, from people saying, you know, I wasn't able to see my mother. I had to stand outside a window. You know, she couldn't touch me. I mean, it's inhuman as far as I'm concerned.
Quite extraordinary behaviour. And I think there's a sort of residual feeling that if your parent, or indeed your child, because I hope we're going to be talking about the parents of the disabled children, the young adults who are not able to see each other, if there's a feeling that if your autistic son or your mother with dementia goes to live in residential or nursing care, it means you don't care about them. It doesn't mean that at all. It means you have that still that deep love, but you've accepted that they've got big needs that you can't supply by yourself. So you're wanting to work in partnership with professionals, so you bring in the love and the knowledge and the emotion and the individual support, and they bring in the professional care, which, you know, people need.
Yes, and in the expertise and all of that. But then you would hope and expect, surely, that the people handing out that professional care are professional and are not hidebound by a lot of ridiculous rules. And I understand that you know, care homes were particularly vulnerable places with particularly vulnerable people in them. We could argue about all the decisions that were made at the time that may or may not have been the right decisions and all of that. But surely now, with the most of the residents, as far as I'm aware anyway, having been vaccinated, it should be a much safer atmosphere for everyone, shouldn't it?
It's just extraordinary, isn't it? I mean, we've sent a really strong letter to the government yesterday about this 14-day isolation law, because quite honestly, Mike, you know, it's coming close to being a sort of unlawful imprisonment.
In
the government guidance, you know, they say, we realise this means that people won't want to leave their care home. Well, many people living in care homes actually have got full mental capacity. How you can think it's all right to say that somebody with full mental capacity cannot walk out of their own front door, it completely beats me. How you think it's all right to try and pressurise an autistic young man into being locked in his room for 14 days. I simply think that, and this is not a criticism of care homes, this is a direct criticism of Public Health England and the Department of Health.
Yes.
They should know better.
Well, I must confess, I'm rather puzzled by the existence of Public Health England, because I thought Matt Hancock abolished it. He abolished it last year, and it still seems to be there, you know, so I'm not quite sure what's going on there. But certainly it's very...
I think we could all get on a lot better without them.
I think that's right. I think that's absolutely right. But I mean, I think this is the problem, isn't it, that we have been led to a large extent by, you know, a little bit of fear, worries about the casualty rates in care homes, and certainly the worry that if you were to mix the wrong people with elderly relatives, that they could become very sick and they could end up in hospital and they could die. But I'm not sure that's the case anymore.
I absolutely don't think it's the case anymore. And also, in the whole point of a care home is you have care workers coming in every day, and naturally, you know, they're playing now their full part in the community. You know, they have perhaps their children to pick up from school, they might want a little bit of social life, they might want to go to the beach, all those things. They're coming in and out every day, going from room to room, and yet we're saying that somebody perhaps who would like to vote in the forthcoming elections can't walk down to the COVID secure polling station and then walk back to their care home without then being self-isolated for 14 days. I mean, what a nonsense
is that? I know, it really is. And I'm so glad you've said that word, because so much of what we're having to fight right now is nonsense, and we're going to try and do our level best to do that. What do you make of the suggestions in some areas this morning of the likelihood that the government will ask all care workers to be vaccinated? They will actually insist on it. Do you think that's going to make any difference to the way that this all works?
Well, so far, it hasn't made the vaccination programme, which, you know, we're all so proud of. And, and, you know, many volunteers have really put effort into, and the NHS has put effort into, and the country has put money into. It hasn't actually changed anything much. Right. For the people who are in priority group one, the people who most need it, nor for the people with, you know, special health needs, such as, you know, the young people with learning disability. It hasn't made a difference to them. And I think the whole point of this vaccination program, and if you like, the increased availability of testing, we should now be feeling the difference. And yet this group of people, and a single group within society, is being treated differently from the rest of society simply because they're living in residential or nursing care. That can't be right.
No, exactly. And so many people now do live in this sort of way, that you'd think that there's a big enough number of people for the government to be very concerned about making sure that it all runs very well. But I've always said,
well, the thing is, Mike, we're all going to get old, aren't we? We're all going to need, you know, a bit of help and care when we get old. We need to have confidence that if we need to go and live in residential or nursing care because of our physical or mental disabilities, that we're still going to be respected as adult members of the community.
Exactly right. But I've always had an issue with social care in this country. I mean, in recent years, it seems to have been neglected. It seems to be handed to the wrong people. It seems to have been administered badly. And I mean, even before COVID came along, I was calling for a proper kind of root and branch examination of the way the system works. I mean, how would you solve the problems that we see? Because I think for some, there's too many private individuals running homes rather less well than they should. I don't think local councils should be doing it. I don't think they've got the capability. You know, I don't think the NHS should be doing it. I think almost they should set up a separate entity which looks after, you know, the care of elderly people.
Well, the trouble is, when you separate social care from the NHS, social care tends to get much less esteem. And I think that's something we've seen all the way through this pandemic. You know, great esteem for the NHS, and, you know, quite rightly. But people living in social care are still people who need to be part of the community. They need to be using the NHS, you know, as much as the rest of us. So I think there must be parity of esteem. I think that it's so polarized. Either, you know, say, let's think of my mum, who's now passed away. Either so she increasingly lived with dementia, and this was increasingly difficult and distressing. Now, either she could be living in the community with me and carers struggling to help her be safe and happy, or she would go into a care home. And that was a complete sort of polarization. And what you need is to be able to bring the love and care of family together with the expertise of a care home. You need a sort of three-part system. It at the moment, it's a sort of either or. Either unpaid carers are busting a gut and putting their own health at risk out in the community. And there have been, you know, some tragic examples of people struggling through because they don't dare to say, actually, darling, I can't cope anymore. If you don't mind living there, I'll be there every day, I promise you. And people have made these promises, and people have been stopped from fulfilling these promises. And that set up a big legacy of anger, guilt and mistrust.
And you've been contacted, haven't you, Julia, by lots of different families who need help in gaining access to their elderly relatives and just seeing them treated better.
Yeah. Because it's, I mean, there needs to be a proper understanding between care staff and families, because often it's a very difficult relationship, and sometimes care staff feel that families are overcritical, and sometimes families are overcritical because they know how they've been, you know, they reckon they know how their mum works or how their husband works, and they want to do it their way. There needs to be a lot more upfront. Do you know, care staff don't get any training in how to liaise with families. And, you know, it's a really fraught relationship. If you're a teacher and you know, you've got parents coming into your primary school, you learn quite a lot about how you deal with parents. And I think those sorts of working together, those sorts of really practical partnership would give us all a better old age or a better life if we're unfortunate enough to have a disability.
Yeah. And like all things, a better understanding of what one another is dealing with, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, proper respect on either side, because I do understand that good care home workers do feel a great affection for the people they look after. Mm. And it has been horrible and traumatic for them to see those deaths. But it's been just as horrible and traumatic for the people on the outside while those deaths have been happening. And of course, many people have died not from COVID, but from the heartbreak. Because going back to, you know, that thing about love, if you're living with dementia, you can't understand necessarily what's going on, but you can still feel the emotions of abandonment and bewilderment. Mm. And you can still feel the emotion of love, which can give you the strength that you need.
Exactly right. Very well said, Julia. How can people get in touch if they need to?
Well, I'm Julia at johnscampaign.org.uk. And that's my mobile phone.
Okay. Thing. Well, there you go. I didn't know. I mean, I knew I was good.
We've got a website, Mike. Yeah. Okay. So website is a good place to come.
All right. Tremendous. Thank you very much indeed. Julia Jones there from the John's Campaign. Obviously a very worthwhile individual, a very worthwhile cause. So if you're having any problems whatsoever getting to see your elderly relatives because they're in a care home that isn't being very cooperative, they would be a good place to start. We would also be a good place to start.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. Now, we've been talking for a long time about the possibility of going somewhere on holiday and flying out of the country to parts slightly warmer, slightly calmer, slightly different, slightly less busy, perhaps slightly sandier. However, the problem now is coming back, because at the moment, according to Heathrow Airport, you could be waiting 6 hours, possibly 7 hours, to get through immigration, because they can't handle all of the different COVID rules that have to be adhered to. Let's talk to Lisa Francesca Nan, travel journalist, host of the Big Travel Podcast. Of course, Lisa, very good morning to you.
Good morning.
Well, I mean, we've talked about the capacity at Heathrow before, Lisa, because we knew that they were going to struggle once the actual proper levels of travel started getting back again. I mean, we're not really seeing huge numbers of people necessarily, but we're seeing huge delays. What's going on?
Yeah, I think this is the very concerning thing, is we're not seeing huge numbers of people at the moment. It's difficult to get an exact figure for how many people are coming into the country as a whole. Mm. They reckon it's about 15,000, 10,000 to 15,000. Those are the estimates, and obviously a good proportion of those at Heathrow. So if they're struggling now with people coming in, I mean, what is it going to be like when we're not allowed to travel at the moment? Very few people are traveling, yeah, comparatively. What is it going to be like? And it's not actually poor Heathrow's fault. You know, they're actually the boss of Heathrow has come out saying this is untenable. We cannot do this. You know, we're trying our best. But it's the government requirements of everyone has got to be checked, and they're checking every single person. Many people would say that was a good thing, but it's not necessarily a good thing in terms of logistical reasons, yeah, for getting people back in the country. Those people are standing there. I stood in one of those queues in the summer for 2 hours, and you know, you've been avoiding people for so long, you're standing there cheek by jowl with everyone from different countries from all over the world. And, you know, like you said, in some instances, for up to 6 or 7 hours.
Well, that's the problem, isn't it? Because we talked about this traffic light system that supposedly the government wants to introduce, you know, red countries, amber countries, green countries. But the problem's going to be when they all get back to Heathrow or Gatwick or wherever they come back into, the arrivals areas are all going to be mixed with people from all of those different countries. And so it doesn't really matter whether you're supposedly safe having come back from a green country, because you're going to be standing for hours in the same arrivals hall as somebody from a red one.
Yes, absolutely. And I think it needs to be made very clear what's going to be required to get out of the country and what's going to be required to get back in the country. And although we had the Global Travel Task Force reporting on this last week and saying that nobody will be going anywhere before, certainly not before May the 17th, people are going to be legally going away after that. And we need to have some clarity as to what's required. Mm. So at the moment, they've just sort of said that, you know, arrivals from the red and amber countries will be required to quarantine, and those on the green list will be required to take a PCR test. We don't know whether they're going to have to fill out any forms, how many tests they're going to have to do when they get back here. I mean, the tests themselves are, you know, up to 150 quid, even more expensive in some places. One provider has said this week that they're reducing them to 60 quid, but that's still an awful lot. There's so many unknowns. And yes, the government have said, yes, you can, you know, previously they were saying, don't book a holiday, too early to book a holiday. Now they've said, book a holiday if you like, but there's going to be so many people who are going to be so cautious and worried about all this. And, you know, even though I am one of the people that has booked something, you can't kind of blame them.
No, quite. And what's the ruling on children, by the way? And I mean, I don't, and by children, I mean, I guess up all the way up to 16. Are they meant to be in possession of a negative test, or are they exempt? What's the story?
Young children are exempt. And I think, as I recall, the cutoff point, I'll have to double check this. I think it's age 12 and upwards, and age 6 and upwards for the masks, because obviously it's really difficult to get young children to wear masks. But that all depends on what airline and what country. I know in the States, for example, you know, it's age 2, I think, upwards for a mask. It's very difficult to get a 2-year-old to wear a mask.
Yeah.
But if you think about it, if you've got older children and you've got you're a family, an average family of 4 going away, and at the moment, I mean, obviously it's illegal to travel, but at the moment the rule is, and maybe it won't change, is that you'd have to take all these PCR tests before going to arrive in that country and you know, when coming back. So it just adds a huge amount of expense. But there are some green shoots from the travel industry, which is good. We've had the CEO of EasyJet, Johan Lundgren, saying this week that he's putting on extra flights. We've got Flybe are coming back, which is amazing.
How are they? I thought they disappeared.
They did. They went bust about a year and a half ago, and they're coming back, and that's been in the news this week. And I've had reports from travel agents that more people are booking. More, and certainly the figures from January and February saw more people booking. So people are, you know, with the rollout of the vaccines going really well. I'm getting mine this week, so I'm quite excited about that. Next week, rather. And so that's going really well. So you've got to hope that, you know, that's going to get something moving.
Yeah. And just going back to Heathrow for a minute, I mean, they're basically saying that they haven't got enough staff. But my problem with that is they may want to get more staff. But if they do get more staff, they still haven't got any more space. And therefore, the reason for the queuing is not necessarily the slowness of the dispatching of people, presumably. It's where they can all go, isn't it?
Yeah, it's many logistical reasons. It's the space, it's the staff. Of course, you've got to have properly trained staff. There's border police as well, border control, you know, things that are controlled, not controlled by Heathrow themselves, but out of their hands. So yeah, it's so many things. And I know that they've been calling to make this an electronic system. So by the, you know, you've got the e-gates and to actually make sure that the forms that people have to fill out at the moment are checked in advance before people travel, rather than check there and then, because so many people make tiny little mistakes, you know, and they need checking. And
I thought most of the forms that were done, and I mean, I don't know because I haven't been anywhere, but I thought you were able to fill out a form and have some kind of thing to show on your phone. Now, if you've got it on your phone, surely they could come up with some kind of QR code and you just go click and go through the gate, surely?
Yeah, that's exactly it. And most people, I mean, you can print it out if you have to, but I certainly, when I've travelled through, I've had it electronically.
Yeah.
But they're still checking, you know, they're still checking that you've got it. They're still checking that it's properly filled in, even though you've got it electronically. So it doesn't make that much difference. But I think you're right. I mean, I don't know the technology behind it, but surely it's just one further step to sort of get someone to check that, get a computer to check that.
Yeah.
And I think that is what the travel industry certainly are calling for. So yes, I do think that's a possibility.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And finally, Lisa, we've been talking this morning about the mood of the nation and how people are when you're out and about, now that there's a lot more people out and about, certainly where I am, there are. In London, it's a lot busier. The trains are a lot busier. What have you found when you've been out and about this week? I don't know whether you've been able to take advantage of the lifting of the lockdown for a visit to a pub. But, you know, there's a bit of an edginess out there, I think.
I've been in the pub every day, Mike. Just not
brilliant.
Like, you know,
well played.
Smashed and there all night. I had one pint on Monday. I went to I had nights out with a friend on Tuesday, and yesterday I went to a really beautiful country pub, which was lovely. And the mood, I mean, I'm in Brighton, which is a very sort of happy sort of party town anyway. And it's quite interesting that I find I'm bumping into sort of old friends on the street, and they're giving me a hug, and I'm thinking, oh, it's not quite legal, but I don't know how to say no.
Well, I mean, I'm looking forward to the day somebody tries to arrest me for hugging someone.
What's that? Sorry, I missed you.
I said I'm looking forward to the day somebody tries to arrest me for hugging someone.
Oh, well, totally. I would hug you. Are you hugging, Mike? Will you admit
certainly.
To it on,
of course.
On air?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
why not?
I would totally give you a hug when I see you.
Thank you.
I really would. But no, it's nice. It's nice here in Brighton. I have to say, you know, I had a little wander around the town, taking pictures. It's lovely to see all the terraces full and people out and about. And it's sunny but cold. I think that's probably maybe helping the situation, sunny but cold, because so as some people are, you know, if it was blazing sunshine and really hot, it would even be busier, wouldn't
yeah.
it? But, you know, certainly I am feeling a lot more positive, and I hope a lot of people are feeling that too.
Yeah, apart from the people coming into Heathrow. But Lisa, thank you very much indeed. Lisa Francesca Nand, travel journalist, host of the Big Travel Podcast.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Talking about people mingling and mixing with each other for the first time in a while, Julia's tweeted in. She says, I've noticed that in the restaurant business, there is a divide between those that are relaxed and ready to get involved in life and those that are tense and wary. One guy said to me, I haven't been out for so long. I feel like I'm struggling to think of things to say. I think a lot of people feel the same way. Let's talk to LaDonna Harvey, who's live in San Diego. She's, of course, with KOGO in San Diego, Southern California. LaDonna, very good morning to you.
And good morning to you.
Have you noticed people being a bit wary of each other going out and about now that things are sort of happening nowadays?
You know, I think there are some people who are just going to be paranoid about it no matter what.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's because they have a health issue and they're worried about it or they just don't know what to do anymore.
Well, you know, there is a bit of that.
Socialized. Yeah, a year by ourselves and suddenly we don't know how to talk to other people.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly felt like that last year when we did the first lockdown and I didn't go and see my kids for about 8 weeks, right? And I stayed in London. And then the first day I went down to see them, we chatted away for about an hour and a half and we had some barbecue and we sat in the garden. And after about an hour and a half, we were all sitting there staring at each other going, what do we do now? You know, what happens now?
I think we're done.
Yeah.
We've covered it all.
And I mean, I stayed another couple of hours and I went back to London. I mean, it took a while, you know, to get back into that whole thing. Our pub's opened this week, you'll be delighted to know. So that even though you have to sit outside, it's still possible to have a beer and a bowl of chips, which is fantastic news.
So, yeah, we can actually go inside restaurants right now. In San Diego, well, actually most of California, we're on the verge of opening back up. We're told sometime in June, I think it's June 15th,
yeah.
That they're expecting to say, okay, no more lockdowns, you're free to go.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's what we're all hoping for, basically. It's been an interesting week in the US because obviously an awful lot of the news has been dominated by John Kerry talking about going to China, Joe Biden talking about pulling all the troops out of Afghanistan. We got Vladimir Putin with a load of troops on the border with Ukraine. It's foreign policy week, isn't it?
Yeah, a little bit. Joe Biden says we're going to have all of our troops out of Afghanistan by 9/11. I guess that's going to be, you know, the big date. So, you know, what we don't really know, though, is, okay, well, what happens to Afghanistan when we leave? Because
yes,
the Taliban did not go away.
Well, they never do go away. This is the thing. And I mean, apparently they're taunting him now, saying we're just going to take over because that's what we do when we feel like doing it.
Then they're probably right.
Yeah. It's good to see that he hasn't used 9/11 as any kind of publicity stunt, though.
No, not at all.
That would be wrong.
I guess that would be wrong, and that would be a very undemocratic thing to do, to, you know, use a crisis to avert a crisis,
yes,
I guess.
Exactly right. Meanwhile, Minneapolis is still very much the focus of a lot of people's attention. Kim Potter, the 48-year-old police officer who can't tell the difference between a Glock 17 and a taser, has now been charged with manslaughter for the second shooting or killing of a black man in a car.
Right. Dante Wright was his name. He was resisting arrest, not in a combative way, I don't think, but he was trying to get back into his car. And instead of pulling her taser, she pulled a gun and accidentally shot him. So the manslaughter charge does appear to be the correct charge. I'm not sure that's going to make anybody happy, though.
No. And she's had to resign from the police force, hasn't she?
Yeah, she has. She has. She's been booked. She is going to go to trial. And I don't think things are looking good for her future. She's a 26-year veteran of the police force. She's been there for quite some time. So it was it's a very odd mistake to make.
Yes. Well, it really is. And I mean, I've watched the video a couple of times and I can't quite work out what's going on, really, because, you know, he eventually drives off, which presumably was the fear that they had that he was going to drive off. So why would you let him back in the car if you thought he was going to drive off?
I'm not really sure. And that's what the videos really don't make clear is what happened. You know, what is the whole story of how this whole thing happened?
Right.
And, you know, again, it's, you know, you get a piece of video and it looks like one thing, and then you get the whole video and it looks like another thing. And you have to try to figure out, you know, which is the truth.
Yes. And that's, I suppose, what we're also finding out about with the Chauvin case as it goes. What's the latest on that?
Well, we had a medical examiner testify yesterday that George Floyd died because of heart disease. And while I you know, don't deny that the guy probably had a heart disease, he was a very large man. I'm pretty sure that had he not had a knee on his neck for 9 minutes, he might have actually lived through that day. So,
well, I think, I think you make a very good point, LaDonna.
Well, it's like saying, you know, it's a COVID-related death because you had cancer.
Yes.
It's like, well, which killed you? Well, right. COVID would not have killed you if you did not have it.
Right. Well, we've had a bit of a reset. We've had a bit of a reset, funny enough, on the COVID deaths front, because they worked out that maybe some of them were not really people dying from COVID, but dying with it. And I wonder whether that's going to be something that the American people who do the numbers in America are going to say as well.
I'm very curious about that, because there is a difference between COVID killing you and somebody dying of a disease that they already had while also having COVID.
Right.
You know, did COVID contribute to it, or did COVID kill them?
Right.
And I think those are two very different things, and we've got to figure it out.
Yeah, and of course, it's interesting now, because government specialists in these matters more or less kind of gloss over it and say, well, it doesn't really matter, does it? And you go, well, actually, it does matter, because if it turns out that 25% of people who died of COVID supposedly did not die of COVID, then that means we have less than 100,000. I know it's still a big number, you know, but a whole industry was grown on the basis that we lost 100,000 people because of COVID. And if it turns out that that's not true, then I think it's quite important.
Well, it is. And, you know, that's the thing. It's critical thinking demands that we have answers, that we understand exactly what it is that this disease did, where it came from, and how it spread so quickly. And so it just wiped out so many people. And we do need clear answers. And asking for those answers does not make you a denier. By the way, it's just saying, no, I want all the facts.
Yes, I know.
So
call me old-fashioned.
Learned decision.
Call me old-fashioned. You know, when a politician knocks on my door and tells me something, I don't automatically go, oh, righto, then that must be true.
Right, exactly. And usually if a politician says it, the first thing I go is, okay, what are they lying about right now?
I'm afraid you're absolutely
right. What are
they
saying to me? It is absolutely not true.
Yeah. Your instincts are entirely correct, LaDonna. Pleasure to speak to you as ever. We'll catch up with you same time next week. LaDonna Harvey, the host of KOGO San Diego Breakfast Show, co-host, I should say. She's, of course, in California.
Talk radio across the UK, online, on DAB, and on your smart speaker. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
If you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1, Monday to Friday, on Talk Radio via DAB, online, or via the Talk Radio app. And if you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us on 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.